The Survivor Specials are back, and today we have our Episode 10 predictions and power rankings for Survivor Season 50. I am joined by one of my favorite guests, Survivor China winner Todd Herzog, who is still alive in the Entertainment Weekly winner bracket, at least the last time I checked. I've also been on the road for 3 days. Yeah, you beat Todd. I didn't know that.
Woohoo! That's exciting. Hello!
I feel like now I have to look and make sure that I'm not giving you false hope. Somebody help me out and tell me. I know you had beaten Tom Westman, and I had argued that that was should have been like a final four matchup or a final eight matchup. And
that was a rough matchup.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can't argue against Tom. I love Tom myself, you know, so.
I feel like Tom is one of those people that doesn't get enough credit strictly because of just because he was winning so much. Like, he didn't have to make any power moves. He just kept winning, and that was his power move. And I feel like people don't really respect how dominant that was. But I voted for you. Don't tell Tom.
I won't tell Tom. I promise. Thank you.
All right. So, Todd, the last time I chatted with you, we didn't know what the cast was going to be. We didn't know what was going on. And now we are 9 episodes in. We're down to the final 10 of Survivor 50. We're going to be ranking these players eventually. I know you've been doing a little bit more of the circuit this season. You've been popping up on a couple more podcasts. You obviously have Beyond the Torch going on. So you're talking about Survivor all the time, making Chad Crittenden pop up in my feed in 2026. That's pretty wild. But what are you thinking of the season so far?
I'm really enjoying it so far. I mean, I feel like it started off super strong. And then I had a little bit of a lull, and then it started to come back. And I mean, so here's the overall outlook on Survivor is I, for the most part, will enjoy any season because I go in with zero expectations. And I know that Survivor super fans are such hardcore fans that if it's not, you know, pure gold, it's like the worst season. And that's fine. That's totally fine. But I don't like being disappointed. So I just go in with zero expectations and I'm usually entertained.
Yeah. And I feel like this season, like last week's twist, we said we didn't have a problem with that. Like we kind of sourced out why we thought it worked and what we thought was wrong with it, but why it didn't bother us as much as something like the Blood Moon. And a lot of people jumped down our throats at that. And we're like, how could you say this? You guys are the most anti like lost vote people. And I think what's also happening to me on this season is like, I'm entertained by the season, but I don't love like the Survivor aspect of the season. I think that's where it's a weird middle ground for me to be figuring out.
No, that's completely fair. And so like, you know, I can nitpick it to death. And like, you know, especially with like the whole fans thing, it's like, I don't truly believe that the fans necessarily chose all this, Jeff, but it's like one of those scenarios. I think Aubrey said it at Tribal Council where it's, you know, something to the extent of like, we can judge it or whatever, but we can't really do much about it besides go with the flow. In not those words, but so much like that. And so I just kind of, I'm like, if I was in that scenario and these types of things were to happen to me in the game, what would I do? And the best I could do is just adapt, you know, like poor Christian. I mean, he did get the shit handed to him, but he volunteered to go out there. Mm-hmm.
And you say adapt. Here's my question for you, because I think this is what a lot of people were complaining about last week, at least the majority of complaints that I saw. How do you adapt to what happened to Christian last week? You get told you have to vote for yourself. So now you don't have a vote. You can't vote for somebody else. You can't bluff it. You have to tell everybody to their face, and you can't play your shot in the dark. What's the way to adapt to survive that situation?
Anybody but me, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like that's what the mindset that you have to have. Is go and find someone who's not in your alliance and try to sell your soul. Like, you have no choice really, unless you want to go home. And I do feel like he tried, which I have to give him effort, you know, A+ for effort because he did try. But at the same time, it's like, what can I do? What can I offer another alliance in order to save myself for one more vote? Because right now that's all he needed to worry about. And I do think he tried, but like, I know for a fact that I would have been like, listen, I will do whatever you want. I will get rid of whoever you want if you keep me here one more time.
Yeah. Even if that means Rick Devens, even if that means Emily, like, yes. I don't care. Just make sure I'm still here tomorrow and I'll be more of a free agent. And I think, you know, he tried to show some trust with Jonathan by giving him the shot in the dark. And then, you know, at the end of the day, we can talk about whether Jonathan giving it back to him was smart or not at the end. Is that hey, let's curry some favor with the jury, or is that going to be Christian just rolling his eyes being like, dude, this doesn't count as a move. But you know, it seemed like he was trying to work with Jonathan and trying to say, hey, I'll play nice with the other side. But I just think at the end of the day, Christian's viewed as such a threat, whether it's worthwhile or not. He exactly. is just always viewed as a threat.
I mean, and cause he is, you know, he's not just brain smart. He wins challenges. And so it's like, and people like him. And so, yeah, they took the shot because they had the opportunity and it was given to him. He had the shot to get the puzzle done and it just didn't work out in his favor. Don't get me wrong. I love Christian. He's one of my favorites. And so I'm super sad to see him go. But he was like, I want to go out there and do the puzzle. I want to do whatever it is. He took that risk, and like, it is a risk or reward type situation. And he ended up losing, which sucked for all of us Christian fans, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, now we're down to the final 10. And I know that some people have said, you know, the boot list has fallen apart and all that. I still sit here saying, like, for final 10, to have Ozzy, to have Sari, to have Steph, three of your older school players, would I have rather been Colby? For sure. But like, I'll take that. And then to sit here and also still have Devens, and out of the new era people that you do have, I know a lot of the internet fandom isn't high on Joe and Jonathan, but if you go off the internet, I called my mom the other day. So who are you rooting for? She goes, either Joe or Jonathan. I'm like, oh my God, like what is happening? And like, it's not that it's like, I actually think Jonathan's playing a really good game this season. It's something I've been really pitching throughout the entirety of the season, but it's just so funny that my mom is so mad Christian went home. And now she's like, I guess it's Joe or Jonathan, but I don't really care. And you ask about Sari, you ask about Rizzo, you ask about Ozzy, you ask about Steph. Nah, I'd rather it be Joe or Jonathan. It's like, oh my God. And I know like people will be like, well, that's just your mom. Yeah, that's just my mom. But like, that is the casual survivor.
That's a casual viewer. Right. Yeah.
That's where they're going.
You know, it's weird because like, I've never jumped on the Joe train ever. Like I've not been a big Joe fan. So I don't see how that is even a casual viewer thing. Jonathan, I agree with you. I am much happier with his gameplay this time around than I was the first time around. I am not sitting here saying like, let's go Jonathan, but I'm compared to his previous game. I'm like, yeah, this guy is definitely playing better in my opinion. But I'm with you. I'm super stoked to see old school players still in the mix and some of like middle school people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, now we've lost Christian, which is a blow. And you did lose Coach and Chrissy in the same episode. So you lost your middle school, old school really here. I mean, this is a bloodbath for everybody pre-40 in the last 3 weeks. No. And where I'm sitting, I feel like Devens is probably the most doomed coming up. But when I sit down and I watch the rest of this, I still say, you know what, like we've gotten a lot. This is far from a nightmare scenario. Like All-Stars, I know that it has the Robin Amber storyline built into it now, but at the time that was a nightmare boot order. Like none of the favorites made it anywhere. Yeah. How old were you when All-Stars aired?
I was in 11th grade.
Okay, so you have a better sense of it than me. 17. Because I guess I was like 12 or 11. So a little bit younger than you were, but like you have a better sense because you're in high school when this massive season, I mean, that was a disaster. And I think people try to compare this, that this isn't even close to that.
No. Like that was a nightmare because like people got to remember, like back then we all wondered why Amber was there. And we were like, how did Rob get cast? Cause he was what, 10th place on Marquesas? And so we were all like, why is he there? And so it wasn't like, you know, the iconic Robin Amber story that we have now because of All-Stars. It was like, what's happening? We were watching our favorites just dwindle away or quit, or, you know, it was horrible. It was a nightmare to watch. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, it really was. And so going back to this season, though, we talk about Jonathan, you know, the casuals are loving him. I think, you know, Will and I were on the podcast the other night saying, is Jonathan maybe the favorite to win this season? But what do you think in terms of these notches in his belt? Are they notches in his belt, or is the jury not going to give him as much credit as he's giving himself?
So from what I'm gathering based off of like confessionals and the way people act towards him, they don't really like him very much. Like, I don't feel like people are looking at Jonathan as some sort of game player. They're looking at him as strength, you know, and so, and a number. And so I don't know if it's like, if his personality just doesn't mesh well with everybody, but I feel like they don't really like him.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like what's happening with Jonathan is the older school players are into his game style. Like, I think Joe would vote for Jonathan if Jonathan sits at the end. I think Steph, there's a good chance she would vote for Jonathan. Like, although, you know, Suri, you have to get rid of. But it feels like anybody who's not with Jonathan, they're not really talking much. Like, Aubrey talked to Jonathan this week, and I thought that was a big moment for Jonathan and for Aubrey, because Aubrey right now, I feel like, is just, she's just wandering, man. Like, I don't know where she's going to land, but she's just wandering.
I feel like Aubrey,
I know you're shaking your head immediately. Go ahead.
Well, I feel like Aubrey's had the absolute, either she, okay, I feel like her edit has been horrific for this season. She has been unlikable, I don't want to root for her in any way, shape, or form. And it's so not like the previous games that I've seen her play, because I've always enjoyed her story, her fight from the bottom to the top. But instead, I feel like we've gotten a whole lot of talk from her saying, it's time for me to start. It's time for me to start. But it's like nothing has happened until this little, you know, alliance with Jonathan, which could develop into something. And if that's the case, then like, okay, great. Let's go. Let's see what you got. But I just feel like for the most part, she's just sat there and been grumpy.
Yeah. And for anybody who's only listening, Todd does still have a full head of hair. He just knocked his hat off and he has a full head of hair still. So Todd,
sure do.
Todd rocks the hat, but he doesn't need to. Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying with Aubrey, and I'm kind of starting to turn, because people keep getting on me. They're like, Phil, you said Gabler could win the season because he had a confessional in every episode, right? Like, that was one of my main criteria. He kept getting confessionals. He got one in every episode. Since Erica's win, the winner has had a confessional in every episode. And he kept getting them. And I said, look, Gabler could win, because why are they giving him the screen time? You go all the way back to Korong with Michelle. They would cut to the beauty tribe, and there's Caleb and Ty pretty much making out with like a fish hook in their mouth. And then here's Michelle getting a random confessional about like, hey, did you know that the ocean is wet? Like, it's crazy. And it meant nothing, but they were showing you Michelle. And this season with Aubrey, I'm like, why are they giving her screen time? Like, if you look at the people who have a confessional in every episode, Ozzy totally makes sense. Devin doesn't actually have it, but Emily totally makes sense. And then you go and you look at Aubrey, and it's like, why? Like, Aubrey has a confessional in every episode, but like you said, her edit's been bad. It's not like we're sitting here rooting really hard for Aubrey. It's like they're having a hard time building the story. And people are giving me a hard time. They're like, Phil, this is the kind of person that you would say could win. And normally when I'm looking at this and I see this bizarre edit and I say that person could win, they end up winning. So I feel like either Aubrey's going to win the season or she's a zero vote finalist. But I feel like at this point, Aubrey's got to be getting to at least final four, making fire, because why else are we hearing from her every week just to be like, hey, I'm going to start playing soon, guys. Like, it's episode 10, Aubrey. I'm ready.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because she has been in every single episode, even if her confessionals have been just, you know, lackluster. But she's proven in the past that she's made it to the end. And so she could very likely do it again. I don't know how she can win unless, you know, she's with people that everybody else hates.
Yeah. Which, you know, there's still people left in the game, I think, that would fit that criteria, whether it's Joe, whether it's Jonathan, as you were saying. Even Rizzo has been kind of blasted in post-game press, which I'm surprised at. I mean, I feel like Rizzo's playing a good game, but maybe people just aren't connecting with him, or they just don't want to give the 27-year-old kid money and the title of sole survivor on season 50 when they never even saw his season 49 game. But there's people she can beat. She's got to get with the right people, though. And I mean, like Suri, Ozzy, Devins, Emily, even Tiffany. I mean, Tiffany's edit's been bad, but like Tiffany, I don't think Aubrey's beating Tiffany if the two of them sit next to each other at the end.
I agree with you completely. There are people I feel like she could still beat over, you know, like Joe especially. I feel like Joe is from the beginning of the season, everybody was like, this guy, like, what's up with this guy, you know? And so I don't know. I feel like his game of loyalty and whatnot is, well, I have to respect it that that's how he chooses to play. But it's like, do you have any idea what game you signed up for? And you cannot be angry at someone else for playing the game that way.
Yeah. And I think what's, I was talking about this, I forget who, because we do so many podcasts now at this point every week, I forget who I was talking to about it, but I'm finding Joe to be so fascinating in these two seasons, because after season 48, you go, I was at the premiere for season 48 and I sat there and like, you see Joe, he's talking to everybody from 48. Everybody seems to get along with Joe from season 48. Yeah. Then you turn around and you see the way people talk about Joe from this season after the game. They all seem to like Joe. I don't know if everybody does, but for the most part, the people who are commenting on Joe's posts, on his Instagram posts, whatever it is, it's very positive and it's most of the cast. But there is just something that disconnects with him for some reason on that island. And maybe it is this like, I'm better than you because I won't lie mentality that's just driving people crazy, but something's not clicking with him and the rest of the cast.
It's really interesting because it's true. I mean, even after China, like I hated PG while I was out there. I hated her, but like I absolutely love PG in real life. So like I understand that part of it, like the before and after. It's, but I don't understand like how he can so openly be angry at someone for playing the game they choose to play when it's full of lies and deception or whatever, because he doesn't have to vote for them at the end if he gets the, you know, like I just, so I won't, I here I am judging his game when I'm saying like he shouldn't judge other people's games. So it's like basically hypocritical, but like he can play however he wants, just don't be mad at someone for playing the way they want.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting with Joe right now, because, you know, you obviously have the firsthand experience with Amanda. Amanda goes out, she plays, she gets third place. She doesn't see the way she's edited down the stretch and turns around and goes and plays Micronesia. You know, it's like she doesn't really get time to digest it. She just goes out, plays the next season. It's time to go. And so I feel like Joe is running into a similar situation that Amanda did, where it's like you're playing another losing finalist game. But what's weird about Joe is he watched season 48, and I got to interview Joe after 48, and I felt like he understood kind of some of the mistakes that he made. Like he was so tied to Eva and how that was like, you know, impacting maybe some of the strategy and stuff that he was playing with. But it just feels like he's playing almost the exact same game again. And the editors are highlighting it pretty hard. I mean, this week was his growth moment, and it was him really just not getting mad at Devins, and that's not going to be enough to win Survivor.
No, so I feel like, you know, 50, for the most part, for so many people's story is about how much they've grown and changed. He hasn't had a whole lot of time to grow or change. And, you know, some people will be like, well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks and stuff like that. But it's like, look at people like Ozzy, who has played a bunch of times, and he's actually attempting to play a better game, and it's noticeable. And so I'm like, that anybody can change if they want to, which means what all is it's saying to me is that he didn't actually take into account that his gameplay in 48 was not good, but he lost for a reason, you know, like he lost for a reason. And if I was a finalist going back to play again, I would ask myself, what did I do wrong? What was not good about my game that I lost for? And you see people like Ozzy, who has been a finalist, who lost, who is actually taking into account, like, okay, what did I do wrong? Can I change it? Can I do better? And I'm not seeing that with Joe, and I'm not seeing that with Aubrey. No. You know?
Well, the one thing I'll say first, I want to touch on the Joe thing, because I feel like for Joe, it just might be too recent, right? Like he has not had time to digest. Like even if he wants to go out and play a different game, be a different guy, do these different things, he's playing too close. And like Joe Hunter is still that Joe Hunter. And that's what I always, you know, get bummed about. We saw James and Amanda 15, 16, 20. We saw Russell Hance 19, 20, 22. You see one version of these people because they're all playing so close together. Whereas then you look at somebody like Ceree, somebody like Jenna Lewis, even though she was out so early this season, somebody like Colby, you see such different versions of those people. And that's where I think Joe, it's weird because they found him when he was already older. So we're seeing him in his 40s rather than seeing him in his 20s and then seeing the type of game that he would play in his 40s or potentially even in his 50s. And so I think that, you know, him playing a year apart, yeah, he lost, but then you also go around and you start seeing people before you fly out for 49 or before you fly out for 50. Kyle might have played one of the best winning games we've seen in the new era. And Eva was, you know, this. And Camilla would have played a great game and Joe starts saying to himself, well, maybe it was more of who I sat next to than really the way I played the game. And maybe that's what's going through his head a little bit.
So it's a narcissism thing. He's like, it wasn't me, it was them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I feel for Joe because of the online reaction towards him. Like, I feel like he's living this fairy tale out like in every way, except for the way the online community is reacting towards him. Like he's on a Tyler Perry show. I'm not going to feel bad for you. You're on a Tyler Perry show. Like, good for you. You know, he's doing all these great things in his community. And like, he's had a lot go positively, you know, with like his sister's memory and getting to talk about that and all of that. But for it's just this online community is like, dude, this is not the Survivor game we want to see.
I've not met him, so I really don't know what he's like as a person. I'm sure he's a great guy. Like he's got, based off of what we see, he looks like he's got a lot of positive traits. But I also feel like there's a specific kind of person who is so stubborn and so hard-headed that they are not willing to open their mind to get to know people for who they are. So they find the people that they're comfortable with and they stick with them. And like, we see that with everybody he makes an alliance with. Like he would never have gotten with Tiffany if he didn't get stuck with her in the challenge and then won. And then he was like, oh, now we're best friends. And it's like, mm-hmm. but you didn't give her the opportunity before that. Yeah, so like, that's exactly how I see it. That's how I view it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's totally fair. The one thing though I have to say about Aubrey, going to the other person that you mentioned there, maybe Aubrey, we are not seeing a lot of growth, but what I am seeing from the editors, right. we've lost Todd. That was funny. I was sitting here. There you go. He's still here. That was crazy. Okay. I thought Todd was mad that I was about to speak positively about Aubrey. Sorry, Aubrey.
No,
Todd,
I love you so Aubrey. Don't get me wrong. I love Aubrey. So like, I'm not trying to talk bad about her. I'm so upset with the edit, I guess, because like, I feel like I've always loved Aubrey and I'm like, why am I not rooting for her this time? Like, it's making me upset is what I'm saying. Cause like, yeah, I want to.
So let me try to spin the positive here, because what did she lose to her first time out? She lost to an amazing social game. No matter what people want to say about Michelle as a player, as a winner, whatever. She played one of the best social games you ever see. She played up to every member of that jury and knew exactly what she needed to do. Oh, well, they were bitter. Yeah, well, she knew they were going to be bitter, and she played into Kyle and Jason's anger, okay? And that worked for her. That's what she had to do. And what we're seeing from Aubrey this time that I did not see the first three times she played, kind of like what you just talked about with Joe, he goes for the people that he relates to the most. So who did Aubrey have? Aubrey had Neil. Aubrey had Joe Del Campo, but then she also wanted to play a little bit with the girls and kind of go back and forth. But Joe Del Campo was always the person she was playing with, and Neil, her and Joe, that's who she wanted the final three to be. Right. And so I feel like this season, what they're doing a good job of highlighting is Aubrey is going out of her way to make that relationship with Tiffany. And we're hearing so much about, I wanted to play with Tiffany. I'm going to make this happen. Now, this week, we're seeing her talking to Jonathan and saying, I need to disassociate myself with Rick Devins. That's not good for my game. I got to go play with Jonathan, somebody that maybe they wouldn't expect me to play with. We see her going to Coach saying, I think Coach is leading this tribe. What would be really funny is if she plays the social game that Michelle played, and they have just as hard of a time editing it this time around as they did when Michelle won. And Aubrey, that's how Aubrey wins. But the editors still to this day do not know how to show a social game. They just don't get it.
You know, that is a very, very valid point, because she has had her alliances. I guess like a lot of what my main focus with her this season goes to is her and Genevieve and how it was just a fight and angry and the two of them throughout the beginning. But the people who have been tight with her have been tight with her since, and you know, she moves from one to another, and that just shows that she is very good at getting to know people. So listen, I will not be upset with Aubrey going to the end winning, just because I love Aubrey. I just want to see it. I want to see more of it, if that's how her game ends up. Like, I would love to welcome in her into the winner's circle, because I feel like she's played so many times, it's about damn time. I would just say, like, it's not a winner's edit to me. That's the problem. But I wouldn't be surprised if she does get there with people who the jury just doesn't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if that's the case, it is like, how do we edit this as a win? I mean, so that's totally fair. I mean, you know, people keep asking, who do you think is actually going to win the season? And my preseason winner pick was Devins. Clearly Devins isn't winning. I mean, Devins is drawing dead. I had said that his move of getting the idol was actually like a good move. But then when he came back to camp, it was like, dude, you were never in trouble. And it's like, oh man, then that was not the right time to do that. That was silly. And now I don't know how he gets to the end. I just don't think there's enough time or space for him to play, but that was my preseason winner pick. So when people ask me like, who do you think wins? I'm like, Ozzie's probably the front runner. If you look at, sorry, my dog is barking here. Doesn't like being in a hotel room, but I'm sitting here like, maybe it's Ozzie, because Ozzie hits the criteria of confessional in every episode. He is playing a game that has shown this growth. He has shown a different side of him. Then you would say maybe Sari, maybe Jonathan again, if he sits next to the right people. Rizzo's playing a really good game. I just don't know if they'd give it to him. Like, the other person is probably Aubrey based on what we've seen on TV. It's just, you know, I don't know still. We're at final 10, and I feel like I can see how the show is going. I do feel like Devins and Emily are probably the next two people out. But then with that final 8, that's where it starts to get interesting, because you don't want to sit next to Sari or Ozzie at the end. But exactly, can Sari and Ozzie navigate that to get to a position? I mean, there's idols, there's extra votes, there's steal votes, there's so much stuff still left in the game. I feel like there's 6 or 7 people who can still win this season. And Aubrey is one of them, despite the fact that I think casual viewers are probably have no idea that Aubrey's in contention right now. But if you look at confessionals and stuff like that, like, Aubrey very much is in the edgic contention for the season.
Now, I don't disagree at all. I mean, even back, if you look at Heroes versus Villains, nobody expected Sandra. Like, nobody saw that coming. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked one bit. I feel like pretty much exactly what you said, like, Devins and Emily, unfortunately, I feel like have no shot. I feel like Tiffany doesn't have a shot. I feel like Ozzie and Sari and Rizzo have a really good chance of getting too, like, far, but I feel like they're also, like, at least Sari and Ozzie are way too big of threats to, like, get to the final three. I mean, if they let Sari get to the final three, how does she not win?
Yeah, so. And that's a Sari favorable jury, too. I mean, there's nobody that Sari sits next to and loses to. I mean, maybe Ozzie, but I think most people would say, yo, Ozzie, Sari played the game for you. Sari wins.
When it comes to talking and her story as it is, I cannot imagine a jury giving anybody else but Sari the win if she's there.
Yeah. Yeah. And one person we haven't mentioned much on this podcast, and then we can jump into the actual rankings, but I just want to see where you stand on it. Where do you stand on Steph LaGrosa? Cause she played right around your seasons, right? Her first time was season 10. Then she comes out and she loses in the finals in 11. And then she does terrible on Heroes versus Villains. Where are you standing with her? Because she's not hitting that legend status of Ozzie and Sari, but I don't feel like she's GOAT status like Joe at this point.
So I feel like, okay, Stephanie is like, she's great at Survivor. She plays hard. She's great at the challenges, but I've never, ever thought that her social game is wonderful. I feel like she's a bit cold, and a bit walls up. So like the connections happen with some people, but not with everybody. And so I feel like no matter what, she's one of those people who will always be a finalist as well, just because people don't necessarily love her.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I'm from the same part of Jersey as her, and I talk about this all the time. I feel like it's one of those things where you either get her or you don't. And I feel some people, like you said, they really do. And then other people just are like, whoa, I have no idea. I met Stephanie at the Ron Clark event, and I was like, oh my God, I could have sat here and talked to you for 4 hours. Like, literally, like, my wife and I were sitting there, we're talking to her, we're like, no, the episode starts in 5 minutes. Like, we need to rush through this. But because she's from Jersey and I'm from Jersey, we could talk 100 miles an hour and get everything in that we wanted to get in before it was time to go inside. But I feel like you hit that on the head, and it's been weird watching this season because I can't tell what barrel Stephanie falls into. Because, like, Ozzie sits at the final three without Sari, I think he wins. Cerise hits a final three with anybody, I think she wins. Like, I think they have that legend status. And I think Colby was playing good enough of a game, at least from what we've heard from all the exit press and what people are talking about. Colby got to the end. He was probably going to win. Now, he was a long way away. He had the foot issue, but it seemed like he was the head of that snake. Coach wasn't going to win. Chrissy probably wasn't going to win. But these other old school players seem like they're in the driver's seat. And then there's Steph. And I just have no idea how people are taking her at all on the season.
I tell people often that Stephanie reminds me a lot of Amanda, where they're like, Amanda's a wonderful person and I love her. And she will always, you know, be an iconic Survivor player, but she has this issue where she will find one person and like really get to know them and let them in. And everybody else is like kind of on the outside of her personal space, and where she's kind to them and she treats them well, but she doesn't ever let them past that line. And I feel like that's Stephanie, where like she's not terrible or mean to these people, like, or giving them a reason to not like her, but she's not letting them get to know Stephanie. And that, when you're out there, is a huge part of this game. Whereas people like Sari, if you have ever sat down and talked with Sari, you will understand why everybody listens to her, because she makes you feel like you have been best friends for years. You connect in a way that you just are like, wow, I get it. And so, and that's very hard to come by in people in general. And she's just real, she's perfect at it.
Yeah. And just going off of that point, I think what's been most fascinating to me about this strong honor and integrity alliance, the people who are left, is that it's Jonathan who's bridging the gap between the honor and integrity people and everybody else, not Stephanie. And I think that is what's most shocking to me. Look, we know Stephanie and Sari have a previous relationship. We know that that exists. Beyond that, I haven't seen Stephanie talking to Devins. Have we seen Stephanie talk to Devins or Emily once this season, like one-on-one? I have no idea. It's Jonathan who's bridging that gap. It's not Joe. It's not Stephanie. And so that's where I would say, if you had a Joe, Stephanie, Jonathan final three, I actually think Jonathan would beat Stephanie at this point.
Oh, I think so too. And I mean, because it's not that Stephanie is mean. It's because if she doesn't have something in common with you, she doesn't understand you. Mm-hmm. She doesn't make that attempt to try to connect. She just says, they're different than me, so like, I don't need to get to know them type situation. That's what I feel like when I see her playing the game of Survivor, is like, she is in her little bubble and that's her life and that's her way. And that's okay. Like, that's just how it is. But it doesn't work in the game of Survivor. I mean, look at back to Guatemala, you know, where she was sitting next to Danny. The biggest difference there was Danny is the nicest person on the planet. Like, you can talk to Danny for hours and she'll want to get to know you and engage with you. And Stephanie is not that person. It doesn't mean she's bad, but it's like, she's not engaging and loving.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question: what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge, they also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialist, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, well, let's get into the rankings on that note, because now we've covered everybody and we'll see where we end up with Stephanie here. But I do find it. Yeah, she's had an uphill battle. And on that season, a lot of people were like, did we even get to know Stephanie? Like, what's going on here? So yeah. We got 10 people left in the game. Todd, I see you reaching for paper. So I'll take this moment to plug the prop bet game that we are doing this season. If you're playing along, I will be putting the props out today. I was telling Todd beforehand, I'm currently in El Paso. I've just been driving nonstop since Friday. So I will put out the props today so that everybody can get them in for Wednesday night's episode. The prize for that game is a custom pop from Todd. So we're along with that, there's a free plug. Yeah, Todd's Pop Shop. Todd, I think for us so far, I was telling Gordon Holmes this. You made Mike Tomlin for somebody, and you made like a Jesus from a very specific TV show for us. And it's like, okay, yes. Here we go. Let's see what we got this time. Yeah,
I'm so curious to see what the winner will pick. I did. Yeah, Mike Tomlin. Yeah. People have loved that Mike Tomlin one. And then I made Jesus, and I was like, you know what? This is the first Jesus I've ever made. So this is fun.
different experience. And it's funny, you know, being a Survivor podcast where you're playing a Survivor game and it's Survivor related, yeah. You would think that it would be a Survivor prize. And so far our people have been like, look, we're in this for the prize. We're not in this for Survivor. So we'll see who ends up taking it home this year. But for the power rankings, that is just going to be a standard prize, which we'll get to. I'll reach out whenever anybody that's for our patrons. So always reach out to them after the fact. It won't be a pop, but Todd, I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you're writing as fast as you can. Who do you have as the safest person this week? All right, good. Who do you have?
The safest person this week is going to be Jonathan.
So why do you think Jonathan? Because it's, first of all, do we know if this is a double boot? It's a 2-hour episode on Wednesday night. Do we know if it's a double boot or a single boot?
I have no idea. I would assume probably.
It probably is a double boot. Okay. So why are you so confident? Does that change anything for you if it's a double boot putting Jonathan?
No, I feel like Jonathan is just in a really excellent spot. He's got so many people who want to play with him. I mean, nobody has actively gone against Jonathan. And now based off the preview, we have, you know, we have Aubrey aligning with him, which brings the nerds in. And so I just feel like he's in a very solid position.
Yeah. Do you think that the Mr. Beast of this all is going to impact anything or no? Because Mr. Beast is showing up this week, too. We didn't talk about that 35 minutes in. Do you think that could impact anything?
So it could. I mean, my initial, I don't know if this is even close to correct. My initial guess with Mr. Beast was, if you watched his show, there was an episode where like they offered people money, but they had to leave the game right away. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to do that and say like, here we go. Here is $500,000. If you want it, you can take it, but you have to quit the game immediately. And I'm like, oh, I want, like, because I feel like that could be entertaining.
And I also feel like if you accept that, you probably never play Survivor again, because the producers would be like, you hate the game that much that you just left at final 10. I know the other theory has been he's just going to flip a coin to determine whether or not it's a double the prize, or, you know, if it lands on something else, maybe the person who flipped the coin will be punished in some way. I don't know how much more they can punish them beyond voting for themselves, but we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
But that does leave a good question, though. If you were out there and you were final 10 and they offered you $500,000 to leave, would you?
No, I really wouldn't. I really wouldn't. And here's my thing. Being as much of a fan of Survivor as I am, even if I was in Devin's or Emily's position right now, where I'm feeling like I'm probably drawing dead, you have won from the most improbable scenarios. Like Mike Holloway won his season. Chris Doherty right. won his season. Danny won her season. Sandra won Heroes versus Villains. Like, people have won from scenarios where it feels like they are drawing so dead in the water and they find a way anyway. From final 10 to get all the way to the end is tough. But let's say Rick Devins survives this week and Emily goes home instead of him. All of a sudden, Devins can go to Ozzy, Rizzo, Sari, and I don't know, Tiffany, and say, hey, guys, like, let's make it a 5-4 and vote out these other honor and integrity people. And you guys will have the numbers. Sari and Ozzy, don't you want to actually sit at final three? This is your chance. Like, I feel like you have that argument. Emily would have the same argument. But yeah, I don't think I could take the money, even if it was a lot. I mean, this is also my second time playing Survivor. You got to go for the win, at least second time playing.
I agree with you. I mean, I wouldn't quit either. But I feel like it would really spark up some spice. Anyway, it's just a scenario. We don't even know that that's happening. You're probably right about the doubling prize. I think that could happen. But
we are getting an auction. We do know that. And we got to talk about, yes. We'll talk about it at the end here, the 51 news. Don't let us hang up without talking about the 51 news, because it's a big deal. But we got to talk about the power rankings first.
Who's yours?
I'm going Rizzo at one. I'm going Rizzo. Okay. And my reason for this is I don't think Rizzo's going to win. I think he's playing a really good game. I've said this throughout the entire season. I think he's playing the best game somebody in his position could be playing. He's aligned with Sari, he's aligned with Ozzy. I think the problem is, though, he can't beat Sari or Ozzy. He needs to put Sari or Ozzy on the jury to then fight for him to win the game at the end and be kind of that voice of saying, no, Rizzo really did do all of these things. Which I don't know if even Sari and Ozzy would do that, even though they probably like Rizzo. Are they then going to be like, no, he deserves to be the representative of season 50? I don't know. But he has this idol, and I think a lot of people are fine with keeping him in the game. I think they're looking all over the place, and Rizzo's just not a face that they're looking at. Having the idol is huge because you can't play it for anybody else. You can only play it for yourself this season. So Rizzo's not going to play it for anybody else. If he's in danger, he'll just play it.
I agree with you. I feel like, and I've been saying this since the beginning too, I feel like they are aligned with Rizzo, and I feel like Rizzo is playing a good game. I feel like no matter what, though, Rizzo cannot win this game because I don't think people will vote for him.
Okay, so let's do this scenario. Joe, Jonathan, Rizzo, who wins?
Okay, well, we would have... I feel like Sari and Ozzy would vote for Rizzo, but I feel like them... And maybe Tiffany, but I feel like for the most part, people would vote for Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. And then in the same scenario, replace Jonathan with Emily. Do you think Emily would beat Rizzo too?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like he has an uphill battle. I really do. I feel like Rizzo, you know how Jeff, I guess it was at the beginning of season 43 or 44 or something, where he came out there and he said, hey, all of you think you have a chance. It was season 46, because I remember Jelinski was the guy, I think. But it was like, all of you think you have a chance to win. But one of you is standing here right now who cannot win this game. Like, you cannot, no matter what you do, win this game.
You cannot.
I think Rizzo was that guy.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Rizzo and Savannah, both of them, first of all, nobody saw their game. Second of all, like, I don't imagine the jury wanting to give anybody from 47, 8, or 9 the title of 50 just because of the fact of that. But You never know. Weirder things have happened, but I just don't see Rizzo winning.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go with my two before I throw it over to you because it's the same thing. I have Ozzy at two. I feel like, you know, he always has a chance to win immunity. He could win two immunities. Like, I'm not, I feel like they're really hyping up the fact that he could tie or break Boston Rob's record, which I think is being focused on so much that he's probably going to do it. Or at least, has he tied now or is he one behind? I forget where he's at.
I think he's one behind, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, I'm not positive. This shows how much we pay attention to those storylines. But like, I feel like Ozzy's probably going to either tie it or break it. Whatever he hasn't done yet, he's going to do. Now, granted, if this is a double boot, he could be in trouble. But he has his idol. He also has Ceri, who has the extra vote. He also has just like Ceri's knowledge of everything. I mean, Ceri listed out her allies last week, and they should have done like the Brady Bunch picture because it was every single person who's still left in the game she has some sort of relationship with. I feel like Ozzy's just too protected. His name keeps coming up and Ceri keeps telling people, why are we voting out Ozzy? We don't need to do that. We can get anybody. We can get him at any time. And it's been brilliant on her part because it's been working. So I'm putting Ozzy at two. I'm feeling good about his spot. So Rizzo, Ozzy, my two guys with idols. I'm feeling good this week.
I say Ceri for two just because of what you said right before, the Brady Bunch Alliance pictures. I feel like her more so because of the fact that Ozzy and Rizzo do have idols, which gives them a slightly bigger target to blindside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would be, see, here's what my biggest problem is. Cause you know, there's been a couple seasons in recent seasons, a couple. Yeah. Okay. I couldn't figure out a way to say seasons, not twice there. So there's been a couple seasons now where we see people who have idols get voted out with those idols. My biggest problem is to blindside Rizzo or Ozzy here. That means the others have to actually work together. And maybe Aubrey works with Steph and with Jonathan and with Joe. So that could be a group of four, but I don't see Devin's doing it. And I don't see Tiffany maybe, but Tiffany was sitting there with Ceri last week feeling really good about herself. And then I feel like Emily probably doesn't go that way. I mean, it could happen, but I don't feel like they're bonding enough to get five votes to put on one of these guys.
But if you think about it, Christian is gone. So Devin's and Emily would definitely have to be scrambling, and they all know that they're coming for Devin. So at that point, what does Devin's do? If he's a good enough game player, which I think he is, I feel like would go any way that anybody wants to go.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe I am getting
and high.
We have
Tiffany is an alliance with Joe, remember? So there's that.
True. That is true. And we have Rizzo being very confident all these tribals and never playing his idols. Maybe Rizzo could be the victim of a blindside this week if that whole group can come together and realize. I mean, Aubrey and Tiffany, they were talking about playing with each other. And then if Joe and Tiffany are tight and Jonathan and Aubrey are tight, and then you have Steph, I mean, that is five. Now, if you get Devin's, you say, hey, let's vote out Rizzo. And maybe you can get rid of Rizzo. I think they'd probably target Ozzy, so I'm still comfortable with putting Rizzo at one. But, you know, that would be an interesting dynamic.
I feel like this is, like, super far-fetched at the moment because I feel like, you know, I personally think Devin's put way too big of a target on himself by grabbing the fake idol. So, unfortunately, I don't see this happening, but that's, like, a cool scenario. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shannon Gus had put on X, like, so we're trying to flush the idol by making him the minority vote. Like, he's the secondary option idol flush. It made no sense. Like, why is Devin's not getting the most votes and ensure the idol goes? He doesn't play it. And based on, and I know people get mad at me for reading this out, but like, based on the press release from Survivor, you can't get mad at me. You get mad at the press release. It seems like he's going to come clean that it's not real.
Okay. That would be actually very smart of him, because they're going to,
then people can't vote for him. Yeah. Yeah. Or you can vote for him, but then you're not voting for him to just try to flush it. You're saying, okay, do we actually want Devin's out of the game this time, this go around? And maybe people say, no, we don't. And if he doesn't actually have an idol, great. Let's just keep playing.
Yeah. I think that would be the smartest move for him to do right now.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I have Ceri at three, so one spot behind you. So I'll just go ahead and say that. She's aligned with everybody. Okay. So we have, well, you have Jonathan at one, but then you have Ceri and Ozzy both in there. So do you think Ozzy, I mean, you know, again, he played around the same time as you. Do you think Ozzy actually has grown enough to win this game? Or do you feel like that this is just maybe like a send off to Ozzie?
Listen, going into season 50, I was like, Ozzie has zero shot. I've never been someone who is like, go Ozzie. But like, he has made me want to root for him. Like, I'm rooting. I'm like, this is great, Ozzie, go for it. Like, you're actually doing something that I think is super impressive. And so I feel like if he can make it to the end, he definitely has a shot, because he's actually playing the game in a different way. And that is something that most people don't do.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, I was so aggravated that Ozzie was back, and it was just like, we've seen him, his game changers game sucked. Like, I don't need to see him again. I don't.
Exactly.
And he's been the star of this season, arguably, which is crazy to think about based on what he did in Game Changers. Like, that just proves, for all those people who will put together these casts and say this group will never play again, this person will never play again, one bad season means nothing. I mean, Aubrey was, I don't want to say she was a waste of space, but she didn't do anything in Game Changers. And here she is at Final 10, just like Ozzie, and he didn't do anything on his season that time around. And Steph LaGrosa was out second in Heroes versus Villains. Like, if you're in their good graces and they know that you can bring it, they'll keep giving you opportunities. And this is really proving that right now.
Absolutely agreed. Yeah.
Who do you have at number four?
Number four, I have Rizzo.
Okay.
So same reason, like that chunk of people, I feel like are going good spot, ready to go.
Yeah. I have Jonathan lowered down. So that's the only thing we disagree on. My number four is actually Joe, because I don't know why anybody would want to vote Joe out at this point. I feel like everybody's probably vying to get Joe to the end. And it's weird to think of Joe, who, like, the hero of season 48, Eva's Superman, like, got the episode replayed, has done so many things with this opportunity as the GOAT, because he's so different from other GOATs. But at the same time, like, there's people who can be good TV, who can be well-liked by the majority of the fan base, and just never win Survivor and not even be that strategic. Like, I don't know, Rupert Bonham comes to mind. He was never winning Survivor, but, you know, America loved him anyway. And I feel like, you know, Joe's not as big of a personality as Rupert, but he's falling into that category more than anything else. Rupert's just lucky we never saw him sit at a final tribal.
Yeah, most definitely agreed.
So that's my four. Who do you have at five?
Five, I have Stephanie. I have Stephanie because I feel like her threat level is not big enough right now, and her alliance is pretty strong. And so I feel like people aren't eyeing her right now. She's not a super strategic threat. She's, you know, just kind of there at the moment.
Yeah. It's we're going to bore everybody here, because I also have Stephanie at five. Wow. I mean, it just, like, why would you vote her out now? I feel like too, if you're Suri, Ozzie, Rizzo, you want to play with Stephanie. You want to play with Joe. You want to play with Jonathan. You probably want to play with Tiffany. Like, you don't want to play with Emily and Devins. Don't let them have that story of, oh, look at us, we came back from a deficit and we're still sitting here at the end. So I have Stephanie at five as well. And I feel like she's in a good spot. I don't think she's anywhere near one of the favorites to win, but I think next week, maybe Stephanie has a chance of going, but this week, even if it's a double boot, I'm feeling pretty confident that these honor and integrity people stick around, with the exception of Jonathan, actually, but we'll get there. Who's your six?
Six, I have Joe. Again, I feel like, so like my six, seven, eight, and nine are almost interchangeable just because of where they are in the game. Like, they're in a pretty solid alliance spot, you know, like, so, Joe, like you said, there's no reason to get rid of him. He's, except for the fact that he's a physical threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And at this point, like, who cares if Joe has immunity? I don't think it matters. Yeah. Like, if Joe it's actually better for most of the people who are really playing the game, because if Joe has immunity and you know that Joe probably is going to win immunity, that leaves Ozzie open to be knocked out. That leaves Jonathan open to be knocked out. That also leaves Aubrey open to be knocked out. Like, Aubrey's won immunities in past seasons. That leaves everybody open. So it's great. Joe keeps winning. Cool. Go ahead, Joe. Yeah. Do your thing. That's fine.
Yeah, and then I'm assuming you're probably going to have Tiff soon. I have Tiff at 6. I think that Tiff is in a pretty solid spot because she's suddenly connected. I think if her edit wasn't so bad early, I'd be believing that Tiff could actually win the season, but she was not on the pre-merge at all. So I put her at 6. I don't think she can win, but I think she's safe this week.
I have Tiff at 7. So yes, mm-hmm. Same page. And you know what's crazy is like Tiffany was not in the first half of the season at all. Like you said, her underdog story that we've been seeing has been awesome, but it just sucks that she was completely left out of the first part of the season.
Yeah, you revealed your hand, right? It's like if you watch a scripted TV show that's pre-filmed, like a Game of Thrones or something, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, in the preview, you see the thing with like, oh, this has that person's in this scene, and that scene hasn't happened yet. And now it's a duel. You know that person's not losing that duel. And I think with Tiffany, they just revealed their hand. And a lot of people say, well, Sandra was invisible during Heroes versus Villains too. Yeah, but the show was edited so differently back then than it is now. Natalie White had just won Survivor. Bob Crowley had just won Survivor. These were people who were being totally overshadowed. Fabio won the next season. It wasn't really until after Boston Rob won, it's like quiet. Kim Spradlin's is pretty big, but it really, really is when Tony wins. And then Natalie's quiet, but then like Mike Holloway has a huge edit. Jeremy's edit is massive. Like they start to look at it that way. And even then, that's when Michelle was getting confessionals out of nowhere just to make sure that we were still remembering she was there. The show's just not edited the same way as it was during season 20. Tiffany winning in a similar fashion as Sandra would be maybe the most shocking thing I've ever seen on Survivor.
It would be crazy.
So, and then at my 7, so catching up to you here, I have Aubrey. So I think that Aubrey is still in a little bit of danger because she could be seen as a bigger threat to actually make a run. I probably should have Aubrey a little bit higher because we are seeing her make the relationships that she's trying to go cross alliances here, but I still just don't know her game. Like I still just don't know her game, and I want to know it, but I don't know it. So I'm going to put her at 7 just in case it's like, hey, you know, Aubrey did everything she could and went out in some BS fashion. And that's why she's quiet.
Yeah. I mean, and for that exact reason, she's at 8 for me, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, I could have her higher because what's going to happen here really soon is I feel like these big alpha personalities that are like physical threats, they're all going to start to realize these are like equal competitors and we have to start taking each other out.
Yeah.
And I feel like Aubrey has positioned herself now where she is not as much of a threat as Devin's. She's not as loose-lipped as Emily, but she's also not one of those alpha physical threats. So she could just completely go overlooked as people start to slaughter each other.
Yeah. The best thing that might've happened to Aubrey is her Edge of Extinction game. Cause people are just missing that Aubrey used to be really, really good at Survivor. You know, and yeah, she was voted out early on a season where her tribe had Joe Angleman and didn't want a returning player to win.
Like, yeah.
What was she supposed to do? So I think people are misremembering how good she is, and she is being overlooked in a lot of ways, which we'll see if that ends up working out for her. I have Jonathan at 8, so way lower than you did. You put him at 1. I'm at 8. My main reason for this is he's doing all this back and forth, but what if somebody catches him giving the thing back to Christian, giving him the shot in the dark, and people start looking and saying, wait, Jonathan is a physical threat, but Jonathan's actually a physical threat who's trying to build relationships and who is playing a little bit more strategically. He seems like he's well connected across the board, but if Joe wins immunity and they do go for the honor and integrity alliance, which I don't think they will, which is why I don't have him in the bottom two here. But if they were to go for the honor and integrity alliance, would you go for Steph or would you go for Jonathan? And I feel like you would go for Jonathan because I feel like Jonathan is probably a bigger threat to win. And you look over at that jury and you see Coach walking in his suede suit, getting ready to vote for honor and integrity. Joe defines that better than anybody else, or Jonathan defines that better than anybody else. So I have Jonathan low because if it does flip to honor and integrity, I actually think he's in more danger than Steph or Joe.
I think the one thing that people will overlook in that scenario is Christian got along great with Jonathan, right? Christian was in the Nerd Alliance. And then we see Aubrey going and approaching Jonathan, which makes me believe that Jonathan as a social player is just more accepting and open than some of these other people. So I don't see Jonathan being targeted for that reason, because people are like, wait, I feel like I can connect with him.
So, yeah. And I mean, that is fair. Yeah, that is fair. And I mean, based on what we've seen so far, they have really highlighted Jonathan's relationships. You know, like, I'm playing a different game and I'm going to go talk to this person. When things go wrong for him, we're getting him saying, this is how I want to play differently. This is what I need to do. Again, if it is a double boot, I still have him just outside of it, because I do think that this would be a predictable double boot, you know, but I don't know. I'm just a little worried. This is really the week I'm worried for Jonathan. If he gets through this and Devins and Emily are gone, I feel like with the edit he has gotten and the game that he has played, I think Jonathan's probably in the final four, maybe losing at Fire again, like he did his first time around. But I could see him absolutely, you know, making a deep run if he gets through this week. I don't know. I haven't seen the cards completely fall yet. That's all.
Yeah. It's interesting because usually I put the Aussie or the Jonathan or the Stephanie, like someone who is a pretty physical threat, normally in my mind always gets booted around eighth place, but there's like six of them now. So it's like, which one is it going to be? Like, are they going to just go to the end together? Like, it's crazy.
It's a really unique season from that standpoint. I think that's why I'm probably enjoying it more than a lot of like the diehard fans, because for me, I always like when a season is different from other seasons. Like, that's why I love Gabon. Like, you'll never see another Gabon. That's why I love 43. You'll never see another 43. And I think this season, like you're saying, Jonathan, Joe, Steph, Tiffany, even. I mean,
Tiffany,
these are awesome. All Ozzy. I forgot to say Ozzy. Even Devin's won a bunch of immunities on his season. Like, these are massive physical players. And then you do have your strategist. This season feels unique. Look, it might not be the best season. It's definitely not the best season. I'm not going to be stupid about this, but it is really different. And that is what I can appreciate about it. And I think that's why I'm still enjoying it, despite all of the flaws that are coming from mostly production, but are happening.
Yeah.
So you get to end it out first. I'll let you go first, because we have the same two people. So how are you ranking them?
Emily 9, Devin's 10. That's what I got. And I hate that, because they're two of my favorite players. I just feel like they're in a terrible position. And I blame Devins for that move at Tribal Council, because if I was sitting at Tribal Council and I saw someone do that, my first reaction would be, I have to now flush the idol by getting rid of him. And so he's going to be a target. But then the other member of his alliance had a vote against him, so they got rid of Christian, and now it's just easy. It's easy. So why not take this shot, you know?
Yeah, I'm putting Devins at 9 and Emily at 10, mainly because I think it's a double boot and we'll lose them both anyway. But I have Devins as my preseason winner pick, so let me put him one spot higher and never give up hope here and say he still has a shot. But I think the misread by Devins was he thought he was more desperate than he was. He played overly desperate.
This is also what I say. If I was Devins and I was at Tribal Council, I guarantee you I probably would have done the same thing, because I tend to get paranoid easily in situations like that. And I think he panicked and he went for it. He could have waited, but he panicked. And so I cannot blame him for doing what he did. I would have done the same thing. But I think he realized just as quickly as it happened, like, oh, that was too soon. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. And he was coming back to camp saying, you all got up, you all started scrambling, you all did this, you all did that. And in reality, they're all like, no, Devins, like, we did that because now we were thinking about maybe putting it on to you. Like, we weren't really like you almost got yourself voted out at that tribal council because you did that. And I think that, you know, at first I thought it was a great move, because I thought his lie was great. I thought the way he navigated, I thought what he said all made sense. He doesn't know that Christian's going to have to vote for himself at the next tribal council, and they can't even try to use this idol as ammunition to force a split vote or something like that. He can't read the future. But what I realized after the fact, what I didn't get in that episode, because I thought the way he played it in the episode was really well done, but what I didn't get was afterwards, everybody was like, it wasn't going to be Devin's. And once you start hearing that, you say, okay, he didn't need to do this here. He put a target on his back at a time he didn't need to. If he waits and does this at final 11, when Christian's probably going to go home, and he gets up and says, I found this, I'm playing this for Christian or myself tonight, I'm not going to tell you guys which one, they can still try to split the votes, but you might also still be able to get people to jump around and make, you know, some sort of decision that's different than what they were automatically going to come into tribal council doing. But he just did it one episode too early, and it is going to bite him. I think his game is over.
Yeah. And it sucks. It sucks. Cause I mean, I feel like before that he was in an excellent position, but you know, and I can't blame him. I would have done the same thing out of pure panic, because in that moment you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going home. I got to do something. I have to do it now. And it just backfired big time.
It backfired. Yeah. All right. So that's our rankings. We have the same bottom two, just in a different order, but if it's double boot, we're thinking the same thing. Before I let you go here, I want to go into this season 51. We're hearing from Inside Survivor. We're saving this for the end here. We're hearing 20 players and two tribes for the first time since season 40. How does this sit with you after seeing the same thing over and over again?
I'm excited. I cannot wait. Are you kidding me? Three tribes. The problem is one always continuously loses. They lose and they have to vote. They get down to like nothing, and then they do a swap and they still lose. It's just like the same thing over and over again. With two tribes, it's typically back and forth, but it also allows us, I feel, to see more relationships form. You've got 10 people to build alliances. So you're going to have someone who is in multiple alliances. You're going to have someone who's, you know, completely left out of all of the alliances. I feel like we just get to know the characters more. We get to see gameplay more. I'm really excited about it.
I'm so pumped. And I know for the longest time, we were all so tired of two tribes of 10. It's the same thing over and over again. And then Philippines showed, look, we can do three tribes again. And we always forget when we were doing our Every Season Matters on our Patreon, All-Stars. And then it's not till Philippines that we do three tribes. And now three tribes has become such the norm, but we saw it twice in the first 27 seasons of Survivor. That's it. Because then it was until Kageyan that we got the third iteration. And so it's become such the norm now. And yeah, there's some boring seasons with two tribes. There's some boring seasons with three tribes. Like, it's just, you know, you can't control reality TV as much as you want to. But it just feels good that they're doing something different. Jeff always talks about, we want it to be unpredictable. We want the players on their toes. That's what we need. And this is actually giving us that. And I like that we're getting two tribes, 10 people. Yeah, there's still going to be twists that linger from season 50 that maybe we don't like, but at least they're showing a willingness to do something different than just watching the same 9 seasons over and over again like we did throughout the 40s. And what I like about it is Jeff's been talking a lot about how he doesn't like the physical challenges. He doesn't want this. He doesn't want that. Now that you can do head-to-head, we are going to get head-to-head. I think it's coming. I don't think we'll ever go back to the days of ripping somebody off of a pole and, you know, possibly dislocating shoulders and people getting undressed because of that and whatever. I mean, you had Dave Cruiser on your season doing all that fun stuff. I don't think we ever get back to those days. This is a big deal, though. Like, now we can start pitting people against each other.
Part of me also wonders, like, are we getting a theme? Are we going to get a theme? Like, could this be, you know, brain versus brawn? Just two, you know, like instead of adding beauty, are we getting a heroes versus villains type scenario? Or are we getting a theme? Because that would be really awesome, in my opinion, as well. Because it's, you know, I always thought I was going to be one of those people who could tell you exactly what season everybody was on. But I find myself getting confused sometimes. I'm pretty good at it still. But with just the numbers, I'm like, oh, man. Was that 44, 45? What was it? But yeah. I want a theme. I want us to have a theme again. I don't care what it is. Just give me a theme.
Yeah. And I think we are going to get that. I really do. I think it's coming back. I think I always say this on this podcast because, look, I know we're just a fan-made podcast, and they're not listening to us by any means. Maybe every now and then they see something on Instagram or somebody listens here and there. But at the end of the day, the producers and the team that makes Survivor does listen to what the people are saying. And they're making more of an effort with that this season. I feel like we're seeing them do tweet roundups because that's what other accounts are doing. And all of a sudden Survivor CBS is putting out tweet roundups. Like, it's so weird to see, but they are listening. And I do think that they're hearing what the fans are saying, especially on a season like this. And at the live reunion, Jeff's going to say, one of our best seasons ever. Everybody I talk to in the street loves it. Let me go find this random kid in the audience to tell everybody how much he loves Survivor and me and Joe and whatever. That's going to happen. But when you start to see these smaller changes, know that the listening is happening. And it's why I always say, you got to voice it in like a constructive way, but voice it, because they will eventually come around on it if enough people are saying it. And I think right now enough people are saying it. We want themes. We want something different. We want two tribes. Like, make Survivor different again. Don't just make everything the same.
I agree. I'm going to be at the finale. I'm excited.
Oh, did you get a ticket already?
I got invited by CBS.
Wow.
Okay. Which I was so excited for. I was like, heck yeah, I'll go. So we'll see. I'll be in the audience.
I will be in, I mean, I'm driving to LA right now, but I will be in LA. I think I will be at the finale. I'm like 98% sure I will be there. So Todd, I will actually end up meeting you on finale night, no matter what, one way or the other, because I'm either going to find you before
or after
the show. There you go. Finally.
Amazing. Yeah. It should be fun. I'm really excited. I think the last finale that I went to was Heroes versus Villains. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah. I went to 37, 38 and 39. Those were the three that I got to go to. So that was fun. And that was just a unique experience. I always say to people, if you get the opportunity to do it, find a way. And I know CBS is saying, they're probably not going to bring them back for 51, 52. I get that. It's a big thing to not make a lot of money. And at the end of the day, the bottom line talks, but I get, they don't want to sell tickets because you don't want this to turn into a Taylor Swift concert where people are like, I had to pay $4,000 to go sit at this and like, whatever, but do some of this. Like, hey, the first 75 people are going to get these tickets. Like, people go. And even if you said you got to pay $20, but if you're one of the 75 chosen, you can go. People would pay the money. Like, people want to go.
Without question. I mean, people are scrambling to go to this finale right now. So I understand why they got rid of it. It makes perfect sense. Financially, it's a giant mess, but it's so exciting. It's so like the vibe in the air, and like, you never really know, like, if you heard spoilers or whatnot, you're like, well, the votes haven't been read, so we'll find out. But yeah, so I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy about that. And with how many people want to go, I think that's why I don't know if I'm still going. All of a sudden everybody's like, hey, this is actually really cool. And hopefully CBS and Survivor sees how much people really want to do this. I don't know if everybody's going to fly out for 51, 52, 53, but people like going to the finales, especially fans. And I know people who have done seat fillers where they've like signed up to be seat fillers and they've gone, and it's worked out for a lot of people and they've really enjoyed doing that. And I feel like, hopefully this is the fun happening, and they see the hype around it and they see how excited people get for it, and they try to find a way to make it more worthwhile, whether it's from a financial standpoint or whatever. I hope so
for real. I mean, even if it's a smaller one, like, it's just more fun. It's exciting, and just keep it in California. That's fine. They don't have to go to New York back and forth. Just do it all in one place.
Yeah. For the 30s, they were all in LA. They were doing them all out there.
Yeah.
Cause that's how I kept going. Yeah.
And it makes sense. So I don't know. I'm excited. It'll be fun. I have no idea who's all going to be there, cause they invited all the winners.
Oh, okay.
So, but I know that a lot of winners aren't able to make it because it was kind of last minute, but I'm excited to see who will show up.
Well, if Chris Doherty's there, Todd, I'm probably going to talk to you for like 2 minutes less than him, just because that would make me, I would lose my mind if Chris Doherty was there.
We need to make Chris come.
Seriously.
I know he got invited, so we should get in touch with him and be like, Chris, just come.
Seriously. That's the Beyond the Torch we need. We need the Chris Doherty.
I love Chris. I've always loved Chris. Him and his wife are just wonderful people. And Twyla. I love both of them. Like, they're just... Vanuatu is one of my favorite seasons. I absolutely love that season.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we are like very much in lockstep on most of our opinions of Survivor, which is crazy. But Chris Doherty, I'm always like, man, just does not get the respect on his name. People got to remember what he pulled off.
But he played an incredible game, and he's just such a good guy.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing which winners show up. But Todd, I'm happy to hear that you're going to be there, and that sounds awesome. So Beyond the Torch, why don't you plug that quickly before we get out of here?
Yeah, I do a podcast with Leslie from my season of Survivor. It's called Beyond the Torch. It is a little bit different of a Survivor podcast. We don't talk the episodes. What we do is we bring a different former contestant to us each week, and we get to know their story. So we usually start before casting and then how they got cast for the show, what it was like from their point of view, and what they're up to now. So it's kind of a deep dive into the players that you've seen, but you get to know them on a different level. And I will say right now, I promised myself that I would never do a podcast in my entire life. Like, I swore I wouldn't do it. I don't know how Leslie convinced me, but she did. And I've actually had a really good time doing it because I am shocked with every episode at the stories that I've heard. I'm like, holy crap. Like, that's wild. So yeah, as someone who doesn't necessarily listen to podcasts or, you know, dive super deep into things like that, it's been a really big eye-opening thing for me, and I'm having a good time.
Yeah, and you're pulling people out of nowhere. I know I mentioned Chad earlier, but I feel like every time I see somebody pop up, I'm like, how did they get them? And they're like, oh, well, Todd and Leslie played Survivor, and they played back during season 15, so they know these people. But it's just, I mean, it's been pretty insane as a Survivor super fan to see some of the people that you're just pulling out, and it's like, I haven't heard from these people in ever, maybe.
We've some instances. See some of the people we have lined up, too. It's really fun.
Who is your next one? Are you able to say that?
Eric Reichenbach is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So he's
which is crazy because he's on our podcast tomorrow with Tegla.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love Eric. So he's our next one. But we do have some really I'm excited, like really exciting ones that you'll be like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So check out Beyond the Torch, everybody, if you haven't. And we're gonna end on this note, Todd. I'm going to say, everybody like the video, subscribe to the channel, patreon.com/thespecialist. But we're going to end on this note. Survivor Analytics with cannot wait for Natalia White's appearance at the Survivor 50 finale. Please. If that happens, we need to get her talking to Jeff so that she can somehow get cast onto another season so we can see what Natalie White's game would actually look like if Russell Hantz wasn't the whole season.
Listen, if Natalie were to show up, I want Natalie, I want Jenna, I want Fabio, I want Christy. Please bring them to the finale. Like, I want those winners to show up, and Brian. Like, get them out there so we can see what they've been up to, you know?
I totally agree. I could not agree more. You are speaking my language with all of that. So, all right, Todd, always a pleasure. Love having you on. Love chatting Survivor 50. Love that we have the positive news about Survivor 51. That is positive news, and it's always good to hear that and end this on a positive note. So everybody, if you're listening, like the video, subscribe to the channel, patreon.com/thespecialist. We just started Survivor Second Chance for Every Season Matters, and that's it. That's all we got. We'll see you tomorrow night, Tegwitz Live with Eric Reichenbach, and then on Tuesday, I'm live with Tori from Survivor Now, but we don't have a time yet because I need to figure out if I'm going to have Wi-Fi at my place or need to find somewhere else to podcast. So, bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.